So this has nothing to do with randomized controlled trials, actually. Something fun about myself is that tonight I'm going back to New York to a rehearsal for a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. I'm playing my trumpet in the pit band. Today I'm presenting my research and reflections on the problem of confronting health inequalities across vastly different cultures and economies by looking at some specific ethical issues concomitant to the history of the international delivery of interventions aimed at reducing maternal mortality. So, I have no relationships to disclose, though we all have our own desire to advance things. While this presentation focuses on maternal mortality, I hope that it can serve as a springboard or a parallel for other discussions of healthcare ethics, human rights, and other issues across vastly different social contexts. After introducing the scope of the problem of maternal mortality, I will use a historical example that suggests that reflexivity on the part of aid organizations and researchers is a challenging and subtle yet crucial element to successful cross-cultural delivery of care. And then I'll suggest some additional guiding principles that are useful in approaching the challenging work of conducting international health aid programs across disparate social, political, and economic climates. So to begin, of the eight UN Millennium Development Goals, Goal 5, improve maternal health, is one of the slowest moving targets. The problem is seated in developing nations, where 99% of maternal deaths occur. While the maternal mortality ratio measured as lifetime risk of dying during pregnancy is 1 in 2,800 in the developed regions of the world, it is 1 in 61 in developing regions and 1 in 16 in sub-Saharan Africa. Pregnancy complications remain the leading cause of death among 15 to 19-year-old girls worldwide. Globally, the economic and social costs of maternal mortality have been estimated at about $15 billion in lost productivity, while preventing these deaths would cost roughly one-third of this amount. The social and moral value of reducing maternal mortality has been well established and accepted around the world. Yet creating medically effective and culturally adaptive interventions has proven to be challenging. Several experts posit that success has been delayed due to an excessive focus on debates about methods and priorities. For decades, the policy community was divided over intervention strategies. Initially, in the 1970s and 1980s, the core strategies for maternal survival included antenatal care training and training traditional birth attendants to use safe hygienic practices. Although this was proven as an ineffective strategy for curbing maternal mortality, particularly in comparison with the proven effective method of ensuring access to emergency obstetric care, for years and even to this day, segments of the scholarly community have continued to promote new research on training traditional birth attendants, despite the extant literature against this efficacy. Why has research and practice failed to abandon this ineffective approach? Why do scholars to this day suggest that further work must be done to determine the efficacy of training traditional birth attendants in the face of compelling evidence to the contrary? And why do those aid organizations and researchers who live in worlds equipped with technology and safety mechanisms of modern childbearing advocate for more humble approaches to childbearing in resource-poor settings? Cast in broader terms, when we apply the latest technologies and innovations in confronting other Millennium Development Goals, why do so many believe that we should advocate for simpler, less developed, and less effective interventions in maternal mortality? I hypothesize that we can begin to develop or begin to understand the answers to these questions by situating the history of maternal mortality aid programs and research within their broader historical framework of cultural understandings of childbirth. Just as global health scholars and practitioners were conducting research and implementing traditional birth attendant training programs in the developing world, concern was mounting in the developed world that childbirth was becoming over-medicalized. 20th century America had undergone dramatic shifts in childbirth trends. At the turn of the 20th century, over 95% of babies were born at home. By 1969, 99% of births occurred in hospitals, a figure that has since remained constant. By the 1970s, the male-dominated medical establishment of the West had developed new technologies to control and monitor labor, just as feminist and consumer rights movements in a number of Western nations were questioning medical paternalism and challenging the ways that obstetric technology functioned to control women's bodies. The alternative birthing movement grew apace as midwifery and home birthing promised to return the social, psychological, and spiritual dimensions of childbirth that critics argued had been lost in the mechanistic hospital settings. Significant scholarship throughout the 1970s and 1980s trumpeted the benefits of alternative birth models, oftentimes expressing nostalgia for pre-hospital home births in the West, alongside poignant commentary that throughout most of the world, obstetric care remained the province of women, with family participation central to the birthing process. So perhaps amidst the growing popularization of demedicalized birth in the developed world, the low-level intervention strategy of training traditional birth attendants had an appeal not in scientific terms, but in subtle cultural terms. Meanwhile, in 1985, an influential article in The Lancet expressed skepticism toward these strategies, arguing instead for widespread access to emergency obstetric care. For 20 years, the policy community was fraught with sometimes heated disagreements over best practice in reducing maternal mortality and morbidity. Over time, further evidence accrued showing that neither antenatal care nor training traditional birth attendants had reduced maternal mortality. There is no longer scientific disagreement that the best approach to reducing maternal morbidity and mortality involves delivery with a skilled birth attendant with access to emergency obstetric care 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yet disagreements have still persisted, and amidst the scholarly literature, numerous works examine the impact on maternal mortality of training traditional birth attendants, despite the scientific consensus against the efficaciousness of this strategy. Given the history of physical and psychological discomfort imposed on women vis-a-vis the mechanization of delivery, it is understandable that those concerned with reducing iatrogenic causes of maternal morbidity and mortality may be drawn to the concept of training traditional birth attendants, while hesitating to endorse models focused on increasing hospital care. Meanwhile, it is important for analysts and scholars to consider the impact that debates in the developed world may have on perceptions of international realities. Despite the useful checks that the alternative birth movement of the developed world can offer to the establishment of maternity interventions in the developing world, it is important that the anti-medicalization position is not taken too far, lest it impede progress toward reducing maternal morbidity and mortality rates. In other words, reflexivity on the part of those involved in reducing maternal mortality is an important component of the ethics of best practice. While this may seem fairly straightforward, I would argue that it is crucial for international developments to involve more vocal reflexivity, recognizing the unintended consequences associated with the social location of all involved actors. The need for such reflection is clear, as it seems that in its place, critiques have emerged which analogize aid programs to colonization, despite the obvious differences. Meanwhile, reflexivity and cultural sensitivity cannot devolve into cultural relativism if efforts are to be made in the way of advancing women's rights to health. In most cases, cultural norms must be changed in order to improve women's health. Thus, to promote cultural sensitivity to the extent that interventions would not change regional birthing cultural norms would require the abandonment of interventions altogether. Because by definition, interventions require altering birthing practices to greater and lesser extents. Interventions often challenge gender relations, standards of risk, systems of medical authority, and priorities in healthcare settings. How can programs thus be attentive to both the problems of operating according to a medicalized framework of maternal care, while also recognizing that in some ways, the modern birthing system must be imported and transplant regional systems? I would suggest that two themes, which I discuss here as postmodern ethics and human rights, have characterized a number of highly effective interventions. These themes might very well go by other names or no names at all. However, when balanced, they can be crucial elements of effective interventions which are welcomed by local communities despite the changes they impose upon cultural norms. First, postmodern ethics highlight the fairness of drawing moral claims and justifications from multiple sources. characterized by the notion that all meta-narratives are suspect. Postmodern theory offers a valuable critique of deontological or rule-based as opposed to consequentialist ethics. Skeptical of ethical schemata configured according to moral authorities, the postmodern critique maintains that moral truth emerges from a multiplicity of sources, the weak and the strong, the elite and the common. Thus, postmodern ethics secure a space for marginalized voices. This approach is quite useful as we consider the challenge of altering culture while endeavoring to reduce maternal mortality amid skewed power dynamics between donor nations and organizations and aid recipients that could easily result in an imposition of donor values and norms onto aid recipients. Instead, postmodern ethics insist in the legitimacy of the moral and cultural claims of aid recipients. Still taken too far, postmodern ethics become relativistic in a world in which not all sources of ethical and moral systems should be considered valid. So I would suggest that in response to this, human rights should also be considered. And I'm actually out of time, so I'm going to skip to my conclusion. So I've described a historical tendency among researchers and aid workers to return to the notion of training traditional birth attendants, despite the publicized failure of this approach in reducing maternal mortality. I've suggested that this tendency highlights the complex and latent influence of social context on perceptions of best practice in healthcare delivery and points to the utility of reflexivity among those involved. It is essential for those. Okay, all right. So.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's the end.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And I'm sorry, I'm about to be mean as a moderator.